From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a paranormal moment with Rosemary Ellen Kiley as we talk about the djinn, shadow people, and even dreams. By the way, welcome new St. Louis affiliate FM News Talk 97.1. Great to be aboard. You know, I'm in St. Louis, and they've got a tremendous lineup of talent. So we're joining them, 97.1, here in St. Louis. Here's what's happening. In San Mateo, California, just a horrible story over the weekend. It could now take weeks to figure out why a white stretch limousine caught fire over the weekend, turning a bachelorette party deadly. Nine passengers were traveling in the Lincoln as it headed across the San Francisco Bay along the San Mateo-Hayward Bridge. That was on Saturday night. Only four came out alive. The bride-to-be, 31-year-old Nazera Fojas, was among the dead. This was a tragic story. As the limousine driver was driving, the women in the limo were reporting smoke coming into the limo. Well, he pulled over, opened the door, and the entire inside was engulfed in flames. A few of the passengers were able to get out. One climbing out through the limousine driver's window. You know how it's connected to the limousine, the one that goes up and down, and you can talk to the driver. But most of the others just died in that very tragic, tragic story. I got to tell you, I've been in limos and town cars all my life. I've never heard of a story like this where a limousine catches fire like that. So they will investigate. The Arctic Sea. Well, they're all being made more rapidly by acidic carbon dioxide emissions, according to a new report. Scientists from the Arctic Monitoring Assessment Program monitored widespread changes in ocean chemistry in the region. They say even if CO2 emissions stopped right now, it would take tens of thousands of years for the Arctic ocean chemistry to revert to pre-industrial levels. Now, many creatures, including commercially valuable fish, could be affected. That's why everybody's so concerned about that. Testimony from victims of the conflict in Syria suggests that the rebels may have used nerve gas, sarin, according to a leading member of a UN commission of inquiry. The U.S., which backs the rebels, denies it. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com, is with us. Greg, what do we know about this story?
Oh, this is the biggest he said, she said. I mean, it came out. First of all, President Obama said that the Syrian regime, the Assad regime, used chemical weapons. It would be a red line and a game changer. And then he backed off on that. Then France and Britain said yes. And then now we have this UN report, which says, well, yeah, they're used, but they think the rebels, which are backed in part by Al-Qaeda. This is like the Hatfields and McCoys over there, because they're fighting against the Assad regime, which basically backs Hezbollah. And now the White House says that Bashar Assad's regime probably didn't do this. So it's a real big he said, she said. The bigger story is the attack by the Israelis. And have we touched off a wider regional war? Have we touched off World War III? The Russians have a base in Tartus in Syria. And the Israelis attacked on Friday and on Sunday, many attacks, and they are what their biggest worry is are these new fourth generation latest Fatah 110 missiles. They are Scuds, but they're not the Scuds of old that they fire and they don't know where they're going to end up landing. These are precision Scuds with 185-mile range, and they're afraid of these weapons that Iran is funneling into Syria, gets in the hands of Hezbollah, and they start raining hail down on Israel. 185-mile range can pretty much cover the entire country, and that's what the Israelis are worried about. These things have a 1,000-pound payload. And so did this touch off a wider war? Russia already has ships in the area. They're sending more ships. They have this base in Tartus that they want to protect. A lot of the Syrians said this was an act of war. The Iranians say they're going to retaliate. This is a giant mess. I've been telling you about this. And just a couple of weeks ago, it was reported that the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, green-lighted Israel to make attacks in Syria. Well, I guess that was a pretty good report, because they did this past weekend.
What's that news hound part of you, Greg? What's it saying to yourself?
It's saying that there are no peace plans. They gave up over a year ago with that. Almost 80,000 people have died. I think there is no way this ends with any kind of a peace plan. This could have touched off at least a wider war, and it could have touched off something bigger than that. I hope I'm wrong.
Let's watch it. Greg's website, by the way, usawatchdog.com. Another truly unbelievable story. Amanda Berry was last seen after finishing her shift at a Burger King in Cleveland in 2003. That was the eve of her 17th birthday. Georgina Gina De Jesus disappeared nearly a year later. That was April of 2004. She was 14. Michelle Knight vanished in 2002 at the age of 21. All three have now been found alive at a home in Cleveland in a neighborhood there. Police announced a development that was hailed as a miracle by their families. Amanda Berry told police in a frantic 911 call from a neighbor's house, "I've been kidnapped. I've been missing for 10 years. I'm here. I'm free now." Police swiftly moved in on the house where three of them said that they had been arrested. A 52-year-old man identified as a former school bus driver. Two others identified as brothers, aged 50 and 54, have also been arrested. One of the three women apparently pregnant or had a baby by one of these other suspects. Unbelievable story there. Regular exercise is touted as an antidote for many ills, including stress, depression, and obesity. Physical activity also may help decrease violent behavior among adolescent girls, according to a new research study. Researchers from the Columbia University analyzed a 2008 survey of 1,300 students, and they are saying absolutely that exercise reduces violent behavior in these girls. Even under the best circumstances, unpasteurized milk can make people sick, according to a new report. One of the biggest outbreaks of bacteria seen nationally in recent years, raw milk from a Pennsylvania dairy farm sickened 148 people in four states back in January 2012, according to the report. Most outbreaks involve a dozen or fewer people. The report, which details what happened during the outbreak, said that the dairy that sold the milk had a permit for selling unpasteurized milk and had passed all inspections. The farm was among the largest sellers of unpasteurized milk in the state. Food safety expert Jeff Nelkin with us. Jeff, let me ask you this first and foremost. If they had a license to sell unpasteurized milk, what could have happened?
Well, a few things could have happened. You know, again, we're talking about, you know, the E. coli and the various bacteria that were found are found on, the, you know, the tits of the cow. There's manure, and that gets splattered around. So it's all kinds of possibilities. Even though you're being certified, there still can be components that need to be addressed, which weren't.
We know that the government has been trying to go after these raw milk farms, Jeff. Could this be just an excuse to shut these places down?
Well, I don't know if they're looking for an excuse, but when they do go in, they're going in with a problem of people becoming ill. And generally, you know, it's children, you know, under the age of 10 that seem to be picking up the E. coli and the Campylobacter. So it is of concern because some of these bacteria can leave long-term problems, you know, with the children going into adulthood.
All right, Jeff. Thank you so much. Jeff Fanelkin, again, food safety expert. California and federal public health officials say valley fever, which is a potentially lethal but often misdiagnosed disease infecting more and more people around the nation, has been on the rise as a warming of climate and drought have kicked up the dust that spreads it around. Jeez. Now, 10 worst cities with the worst traffic. Listen to this. Last year, the average American driver wasted 38 hours sitting in traffic. 38 hours. Here are the 10 worst cities because of traffic jams, starting with number 10, going all the way to number 1. Number 10, Boston. They got enough problems to worry about right now, but Boston was number 10. Washington, D.C., number 9. Number 8, Seattle. Number 7, San Jose, California. Number 6, Bridgeport. Number 5, New York. Number 4, Austin, Texas. Number 3, San Francisco. Number 2, Honolulu. Who would think that? And, of course, the worst city for traffic, of course, Los Angeles. us. There you go. As you know, we've been reporting on the citizens' hearing on disclosure. It's wrapped up. Up next, one of those who testified, Grant Cameron. He joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, one of the finest UFO researchers of all time, Grant Cameron, also noted author, UFOs, Area 51, and government informants. Grant, of course, a Canadian researcher. He was one of those at the citizens' hearing on disclosure, the hearing that Steve Bassett had put on. Steve, of course, was on the program a few weeks ago talking about that. We're going to get a rundown from Grant on just what happened, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Grant, welcome back. How are you?
Just doing fine, George. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. This was exciting. This could very well be one of the most important UFO types of activity that we've had in a long time, don't you think?
Yeah, I would say the way we sort of evaluate it, I was talking to people in the room. Basically, I think since the Greer disclosure conference in 2001, I think this is the biggest event that there has been. And the people in the room, there was basically the people in the room and the people outside the room. Like you would have, you know, reporters who were reporting on it outside the room, didn't realize what was going on. If you were inside the room during that week, it was something else. It was like nothing I've seen in a long time. And I almost knew right from the word go. That this is going to be like this. I talked to Steve first about this in October of last year. I was in Philadelphia talking to him, and he first presented the fact that he might try to do this. And I guess it all came down to the witnesses or the panel. Mm-hmm. Once they got the six people on the panel, it was just a foregone conclusion that it was going to be an exciting week, because basically what had happened was you got – you know, in the UFO community, you and I, we've been in a long time. We know all the stories. So there really was only about four or five really dramatic new stories. Other than that, it was the same old stories. But what you saw is basically this panel of six people who really...
And these were former Congress and senators, right?
Yeah, there was one senator and five Congress people. None of them had really any background in UFOs. They came in, they were sort of novices. And sort of the way I describe it is... one of the things I testified on that they finally asked me about was about mental phenomena involved with flying saucers. And when I brought this up, I told my little thing. I can remember, I think it was one of the women. I think it was Lynn, Congresswoman Lynn Woosley. You could hear her say when I finished, she said, "Oh, my God." And that's the way I could sort of sum up what happened in that room. By the middle of the afternoon on the first day, it was like an "oh my God" moment. You could see on their faces that they were convinced that they were just sort of they were raising the white flag already. And basically, what it comes down to is we've had some important events like we had the pilots that were at Washington who testified. So they get up there, they testify for an hour, take a number of questions, and then we had the one with Hastings and the nuclear guys that were in Washington, and the same thing, it goes for an hour, they take a couple of questions, and then it ends. This is sort of like you go for an hour on the best evidence, then you take a 15-minute break, then you have the Roswell hour and a half of Roswell mm-hmm. evidence, then you have nuclear weapons evidence, and it was just like overwhelming for these people. They just had never seen anything like it. They had no idea of the amount of evidence that was there. And as I said, by the middle of the afternoon on the first day, you could see that it was over, that this was going to be a foregone conclusion, that they were just amazed at what they were seeing.
Did these panelists, Grant, former members of the House and the Senate, did they have that look like, why isn't the Congress right now investigating this?
Not at first. You started to hear it, but on the final day, you could sort of tell when they made their final statements, especially Senator Gravel, who started out his final statement. He said, I've gotten kind of angry, and I want to apologize for getting angry, but I'm angry. And then he started like, I can't believe this. The government has covered this thing up, and they've wasted all this money, and they've got all this technology, and they're withholding this technology. And that was kind of the sort of the statements that the final statements that were made by the congressmen and senators. The only real drawback to any of them was, and I sort of knew this was going to happen, was Congressman Merrill Cook from Salt Lake City. He came in stating that he was sort of skeptical. He was interested in UFOs. He believed that there were extraterrestrials based upon his religion, but he was kind of skeptical about the scientific validation for ETs. And that was his sort of final conclusion. But he, again, basically stated that there was a cover-up, and he was actually shocked because one of the new things that came up was the Rendlesham Forest witnesses, Penniston and Burroughs, came up with their lawyer, and they announced that they're suing the U.S. government based upon the fact that they have had a lot of their medical records withheld. And Merrill Cook, in his final statement, was shocked by this because I guess he's had a lot of interaction with the Veterans Administration. And during the testimony of the Rendlesham Forest, he was convinced, based upon what they were saying, that there were classified sections of files in the VA, mm-hmm. and that their files were in there, and they couldn't get their own medical files. So one of the things they did at the end was all the members of the panel actually signed a demand to the U.S. government to release the medical records for the two main witnesses in the Rendlesham Forest case. Because basically what is being said now is they didn't even work for the U.S. Air Force for a period of time because these records have gone classified. And Merrill Cook was so shocked that he didn't know that there was classified files inside the VA. So that was in his final statement. He was furious at this. I mean, so you could tell with these guys that they realized that this was for real and that their government had let them down. And so it was but it took till the final day till you actually heard them actually express this sort of anger that these people are right, and why don't we do something about this?
Now, where does it go from here, Grant? So we had the hearing, lasted several days, great panelists, great people who testified, yourself included. Steve Bassett did just yeoman's work putting it together. Now what happens?
Well, there was a lot of decisions, and I think Senator Gravel was sort of running that part of it. He was asking the witnesses, what do you want us to do? What do you think is going to work? And it sort of came to the conclusion that the another Senate hearing wasn't going to happen. And even Gravel said that's a dead letter if you try to get this thing into a hearing in the Congress. And basically what it was sort of decided was that they were going to try to get a resolution, which was drafted by Danny Sheehan and Antonio Huneas from Open Minds magazine.
Right.
They drafted a resolution which was sort of redrafted again by Senator Gravel and the people on the committee. And based upon the number of countries that have testified, they think that they can get a country that will actually bring this to the floor at the UN and get this resolution. What the resolution says is that they want an investigation, but more to start, they want the UN to do the same sort of thing as was done last week, is to have a worldwide investigation where all sorts of witnesses from around the world can come and do the same sort of testimony, this time in front of the United Nations, instead of in front of this small panel that was in Washington. And the other thing that they concluded, this thing that they wanted the records released for the Rendlesham Forest, and a lot of them stated that they would stand behind this. In fact, Senator Gravel said, if this thing gets to the United Nations and we get a member of the United Nations to bring this forward, he's going to go to New York and try to push it. So you actually have a situation now where you actually have like six congressmen and senators who are actually on the hook. And a lot of people said that they really had nothing to lose, but they do. I mean, they're still, you know, out there trying to look for a job after Congress and Senate. And their reputation could be ruined by what they've done. So they're going to have to stand up. And it does appear that they're going to stand up for this. So we actually have six former congressmen and senators who are now on our side and who are publicly speaking out on our behalf. And we didn't have any before.
That's exciting, Grant. I hope this works. I hope it works for everybody who's been in the UFO community for so long. What was for you, because as you mentioned, a lot of this you've already known about, it's been kicked around, but what was for you the most startling aspect that came out of this hearing?
Again, I would say it was just the amount of material that when I was in the room, like, you know, you've been to a lot of conferences where you see people coming and going. There was really nobody coming and going. Once people were in the room, they were in the room. Like, nobody, everybody's riveted.
Yeah.
There was, like, the most dramatic one was the Roswell panel, because the people on the committee actually tried to sort of question it. And every time they would question, like, Randall or Schmidt or Friedman, these top experts, they would bring up another three witnesses, and then you could just see that, wow, they knew this was the big case, and they were trying to ask some real serious questions.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, Grant, and also the media coverage. I'm really curious to see what you got. Then we'll take some phone calls with you. Grant Cameron with us, just back from, of course, the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. We're going to take your calls as well next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Grant Cameron with us. Of course, his website, presidentialufo.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll take your calls in a second. Grant, the panel, as they listened to the Roswell testimony, did they really seem interested in that?
Oh, yeah. They were riveted to, well, they were riveted to most of it. The only time I ever saw them sort of lose interest was Thursday afternoon. I was on a panel then. It was all the foreign countries were testifying. And there you could see they were sort of losing. It was almost like they heard too much already. But for like when you get Roswell, and then right after the Roswell, you get the nuclear incidents with the missile silos and stuff like that. I mean, it's just one thing after another. But everybody was riveted. There was nobody moving in the room. It was electric in the room. It was just it was something else.
How about the media exposure? Did you get the kind of media press that you expected?
Well, a lot of people were watching it. They were sort of waiting, but I don't think there was really any surprises. You had Open Minds and Huffington Post and Billy Cox down at the Tampa Tribune, all writing sort of positive pieces on it. The newspaper people, what they seemed to do, I saw them when I was standing in the hall, is they would come in and they would just be doing a story. They wouldn't actually watch the testimony. They just wanted a high-profile person like Senator Gravel or somebody to comment, and they would just run off and do their story. But the stories now, I think, have changed in ufology. There's not really the real laugh, jokey-type things that used to be there. Most of them were sort of, centered on how much the congressmen and senators were getting paid. And then they would just do a little piece like this is what they're trying to get out. There was really nothing to do with the testimony. The big development was the Politico video that Steve Bassett did. It's a 12-minute interview that he did with Politico, which was unbelievable. Steve was extremely good in this. So I would think it was fairly positive. I don't think there was any surprises. We didn't expect some big breakthrough from the Washington Post or anything. New York Times did do a piece. It was sort of level. They had some comments from Leslie Kane that she said was, that she was misquoted. But I would say the press was fairly good. Nothing that was any surprise, I don't think.
Yeah, you didn't see any snickering by the
media. Only one I saw was Canada, and that, unfortunately, but it was written even before the thing even started. And it was, crazy senators taking a crazy subject. What do you expect? And yeah. Then made the mistake that there was Paul Hellyer was going to testify. And he's crazy, too, but didn't even realize there was three Canadians testifying. So that was the only one that I saw that was a really ugly article. And it was written even before the thing even started.
And, of course, you're Canadian. So how did you feel about that?
Well, I wrote an opinion to them and said, well, how could you even not even realize there's three Canadians testifying? And they just run it. They really don't care. So. None of the Americans saw it, so, it doesn't really affect things. Most people are waiting for the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN. CNN did a little tiny thing. I think they spent like 5 minutes. And the New York Times were running around there. And their piece was, I think, a step up from what I expected.
Well, in the big thrust of this, of course, Bassett wanted to illustrate how this would look like before a real House or Senate committee, right?
Yep, and that's what it looked like. Once you're in there, once you were past the first couple of hours, that's what it looked like. That's what it felt like. It was really impressive. That's what I'm saying. When you were in the room, people were riveted to what was going on, and the congressmen and senators were playing it like they would normally do. In fact, I made a speech to them. And I said, like the latest Gallup poll for the Senate has their approval rating at about 15%. And I can pretty well guarantee you that the approval rating of these guys in that room was 95%. There was only one guy that I know that was a little bit critical of what was going on, but they were, you couldn't tell who was the Republicans, who was the Democrats. They were just asking questions. There was no politics. It was really impressive, and it almost gave you an idea that if Senate were actually to run themselves, or the Senate and the Congress were to run things like these guys ran it, you could actually get something done in the country. I mean, they were really impressive, and it did seem like a Senate hearing, a Senate or a congressional hearing.
Well, that's the kind of politicians we need, Grant, not the ones that you don't know if they're a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, an Independent. You just want the person to do the right thing.
Yeah, like these guys got standing ovations. You'd never see that in Congress.
No. Never.
They were extremely, extremely popular in the room. And there was a lot of standing ovations. Like Steve Bassett got two standing ovations, which I think he deserved. Because, I mean, he did pull this thing off. I mean, everybody sort of was criticizing him. What do you think he's doing? You know, here's Steve Bassett again. And he hit a home run. There's no doubt about it. This was a very impressive event that will go down in history.
He did. He went out. He raised the money. He put it together. He did it all. He put his whole neck on the line on this one, didn't he?
Yeah, and he worked. You probably know Steve. I mean, he looked like he hadn't slept for about 5 days and was running around and just very on edge. But you could tell he this was his baby, and he pulled it off.
Well, you know, I always told Steve, if he were a bulldog, I don't want him to bite me because he'd never let go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. And he won't. He'll just keep going to the next thing. And I think that's how disclosure comes. Because to me, disclosure is, it's not, you know, some messiah who's going to come and save us or the perfect case or the perfect sighting. It's basically any social or political movement takes years and years, and it's just keep going and going and going. And finally, you know, the politicians just throw up their hands and join you. And so Steve is never going to give up. And I think he's the guy that we need to keep pushing the disclosure thing, because he'll have another program, and he's just going to keep going until he finally gets what he wants.
All right, let's go to the phones. Marlene in Tucson, Arizona, first-time caller. Hi, Marlene. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I was listening to the station and was just wondering about this disclosures that you've been having hearings, and I wondered if anyone ever considered the fact that UFOs may have something to do with our weather patterns, either destruction or causing certain things to happen on this earth that perhaps we're not aware of, just so that our government actually works with weather and, you know, seeds clouds and does other things. And the reason I'm asking this question is because my daughter was an air traffic controller, tower control at Homestead Air Force Base.
Okay.
And she was there during the time Hurricane Andrew destroyed the base. She was one of the 17 people left on the base through that hurricane that remained on the base. And shortly before that happened, tower control and her shift and other shifts actually witnessed UFOs over the base for a day or two, and they could visually see them in the sky in the daylight. And I know that they were talking back and forth with Washington about them. And I know they housed a lot of stealth bombers there. And I don't know the time period exactly between when they witnessed that and after the base was destroyed. But it was the only base known of in the history of the United States that it totally wiped out.
Well, and let me tell you, Marlene, Homestead has been known to have some UFO cases out there. As a matter of fact, it was reported that then-President Nixon took Jackie Gleason, the comedian, to Homestead to show him some extraterrestrials. Remember that case, Grant?
Yeah, there's actually some pretty good witnesses that described the case. Yeah, I know that case well.
Now, do you have any idea whether these ETs, these UFOs, can manipulate weather?
Well, I don't know if they can manipulate weather, but I know that they're interested in the environment, and that's based upon a lot of the contactee people who have sort of interacted or who claim to have had interactions or abductions. A lot of them talked about being shown environmental destruction, that the aliens are very concerned about this kind of stuff. In fact, I'm going to be visiting with Chris Bledsoe, who is a sort of a famous abductee down in North Carolina tomorrow. I'm stopping by to see him. And when I talked to him, I said, you know, do you have a mission? And he said, yes. And basically he was told about the environment, that we're destroying the environment and they're very concerned about it. And that is a message that a lot of contactees are telling.
We're with Grant Cameron, of course, and he is a Canadian researcher. He has researched major UFO stories
since almost the beginning of time, noted author as well. Let's go to Dennis in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? It's Dennis. How you doing?
Good,
buddy?
Dennis. All right. All is well. Thank you.
So, yeah, we're just talking about different sightings and stuff like that. And I'm actually a military aviator, and I've seen different things in the air that I would rather not question. But, you know, now that I'm out of the military, I have to question them. I've seen things in the sky that do things that they shouldn't do, like aerodynamically. It's impossible, and they've done things that, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I just want to know what your take on that is. I mean,
let me ask you, Dennis, what was the strangest thing that you ever saw up there?
The strangest thing I ever saw, let's see, I was flying about 150 knots in a rotary wing aircraft, and I saw something that went across. It was probably, I've seen things at 50,000 feet. I know what 50,000 feet looks like, and I've seen things at 50,000 feet go across the sky, and it's called an illusion that the military uses quite often, actually, the size and distance illusion. But I've seen things that were beyond 50,000 feet, like a green illumination, that have gone across the sky from, you know, east coast to west coast at an unbelievable speed. And you can see satellites. The human eye can see satellites, and they look like stars going across the sky real slow. But green lights is not the color that you see in the sky. It's not the normal color pattern that you'll see from a satellite.
Or a meteor. You know, as you know, meteors will buzz by really fast. Granted, it kind of reminds me of the testimony of Milton Torres, the son, and he talked about his late father's situation, didn't he?
Yeah, he got probably the biggest standing ovation because he was really angry. I mean, he was angry at the pain that his father had to withhold the story for 40 years, wasn't allowed to talk about it, and he wanted to tell his father, but he couldn't tell his father. His father had died, so the son testified, and there was a huge standing ovation because he was getting pretty angry by the time this was all said and done. There are a lot of these military witnesses who see this kind of stuff. The problem now we have is, like, you remember back to 1977, the CIA did a study, and they said that a lot of the sightings were of U-2 SR-71 type stuff up at 80,000 feet. So now we have the problem with UFO sightings that we really can't tell what's ours and what's theirs. And that was part of what made the people on the committee so angry, is they realized that we have this technology. We're flying this stuff around, and they don't know about it. They financed this stuff. They authorized the money, and it was apparent to them, especially on the Friday morning panel. They had the technology panel, which had Dr. Wood, Dr. Greer, and Dr. Vallone, and Dr. Roger Lear. And these are all like PhDs and doctors, and they're basically talking about all the technology we have. And then you could see them sort of starting to get a little angry that they realized that we not only are UFOs for real, but we figured it out and we're flying this stuff around. And nobody, they withheld it while the population doesn't know. And so that made them very angry when they heard the testimony on Friday morning about the stuff that apparently we have and we're flying around.
Did Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, make it there?
He came on Skype at the beginning, so his sound is not that good. But he did an opening statement on Skype, and that was good enough for everybody.
Yeah, I know we've been trying to get him back on the program. He's an old friend of ours, and I'm not sure he's up to it these days.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he was able to do it via Skype. Let's go to Jeff, Culver City, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, George and Mr. Grant Cameron? Yes, when it comes to disclosure and revealing that UFOs exist and that there are many different shapes to the crafts, made me wonder about why the government consistently keeps this information hidden from the vast majority of the American public while simultaneously involving or entangling certain select members of the public in their so-called extraterrestrial shenanigans. Many of these individuals have repeatedly said that they have witnessed and seen these various crafts, yet the lies and denials persist. And I'm wondering, Mr. Cameron, if this whole UFO stuff is basically a government-run program and that these people who are behind these lies and smoke screens just basically want to know who are the individuals who are seeing these crafts, what the apparatus is all about, the designs, the configurations, and all that, and I want to get your views on that.
Okay, if you go to my webpage, presidentialufo.com, the second article on the front page is an article on the 64 reasons why the government's decided not to tell you the truth. And what I looked at is what Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford, who were very interested in UFOs before they got in, once they got into the White House, they suddenly shut up. And I tried to figure out why, what did they tell the presidents to shut them up? So if you want to look there, that gives you an idea of why I think they may have covered it up. But I do say, and I've said in my latest book, that I think the government is trying to tell us the core story. They're trying to tell us the sort of the basic story of UFOs without releasing the classified material. I think they are making some indirect disclosures as to what's going on.
Let's go to Dave in Worcester, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. David, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I just had a quick question. I had heard this story regarding the aliens that were discovered in Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
It was about, I don't know, it's a politician, a congressman, a senator or something who was shown the aliens right after it happened, and he was like, had some type of medical reaction, heart attack or something. Have you ever heard that story?
I haven't heard of that, Grant. Have you?
Well, there was a guy, there was a sort of a local politician who had seen the bodies who sort of freaked out. They brought him in there. And then there's the story, I think it was a senator from New Mexico who met with Truman 2 days after. There was an emergency meeting at the White House. But there was I can't remember, it was a local politician or a state politician who had seen the bodies and reacted very badly to it.
And, of course, the story of The Undertaker was always a classic, too. Roswell will go down in history, along with that, and Rendlesham is, I think, several of the best UFO cases out there, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see if we can squeeze one or two more in, and we'll go to Jared in Provo, Utah. First-time caller. Hi, Jared. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Greg. Big fan of your show.
Good to have you with us.
So I'm actually a Mormon in Utah as well, and I just heard our senator was there, and very proud of him. So I kind of wanted to educate you guys on, like, the Mormons' belief in aliens, and we do believe in aliens. But basically, we believe that that one day we will go to heaven and get everything that God had or has, and we'll be able to kind of create our own earth.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of far out, I know, but yeah, so we'll be able to create our own earth, and our children will, become advanced like we are, but they would look more like us. So I was kind of wondering, like, do you think? I mean, we believe that there are, like, trillions of other Earths and populations and stuff. So do you think that these other aliens or whatever is going on here, there's several different kinds of aliens, and some are good or some are bad?
There's been some report, Grant, of, what, 57 types of different aliens, maybe more? And, yes, some are good, some are bad.
Yeah, I would say, if there's billions and trillions of stars, there could be billions of different civilizations, and there could be piles, and the only ones we really know about are the ones that are interacting with us. There could be thousands. Who knows? We know for sure the basic testimony says there's grays and reptilians and light beings and stuff like that, but the basic ones, there's 12, but I would say probably going to be talking thousands or millions when you get the whole answer.
Truly a remarkable story. And Grant, thank you for being on the program. Grant Cameron, of course, one of many who testified at the citizens' hearing on disclosure. Stephen Bassett's hearing did a great job on that as well. Thank you, Grant. Up next, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, as we talk about the paranormal side of life. Next.